Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus. Coming up, more than 100 people have been killed in an attack at a university in the town of Garissa in central Kenya. We hear the country's president.
On my own behalf, on behalf of my government, I extend condolences to the families of those who have perished in this attack. We continue to pray for the quick recovery of the injured and the safe rescue of those still being held hostage.
And refugees fleeing the insurgency in northeastern Nigeria call on their president-elect Muhammadu Buhari to immediately stop the terrorist group Boko Haram.
What I expect of him is a peaceful Nigeria and not trying to Islamize the whole country. You know, since Buhari said if he climbs, Boko Haram will stop, we're expecting that from him.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Somalia's Al-Shabaab militants have killed more than 100 students at a university in the northeastern county of Garissa in central Kenya. According to the authorities on the ground, at least 500 other students have been rescued from a place where the terrorists had held them hostage, and hundreds more remain unaccounted for. James Shimanyula prepared the following report.
Shortly after dawn on Thursday, hell broke loose when out of the blue, heavy gunfire rent the air around Garissa University in northeastern Kenya, forcing hundreds of students to flee, seeking safety outside their campus. One of the students who sought anonymity using a mobile phone shared with me sounds of pounding footsteps of students as they ran in various directions from the campus. All of a sudden, screams were heard in the vicinity of the campus as ambulances and police cars blowing sirens pulled up to locate the site where Al-Shabaab were holding hostages. A female student who preferred to remain anonymous, speaking by mobile phone from her hiding place inside the campus, had the effrontery of briefly providing an update of what Al-Shabaab militants were doing.
Al-Shabaab, even right now, they are still holding students hostage.
Already, Somalia's Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility for the attack. In a dispatch to an independent local station in the Somali capital Mogadishu, Al-Shabaab said in a terse statement, and I quote, "We have so far killed dozens at the University of Garissa in Kenya, and the operation is continuing," end of that quote. The statement, which quoted Ali Dere, spokesman for Al-Shabaab, concluded by saying, "We attacked the Garissa University in Kenya because we are at war with Kenya." Addressing Kenyans shortly after the attack, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said,
"On my own behalf, on behalf of my government, I extend condolences to the families of those who have perished in this attack. We continue to pray for the quick recovery of the injured and the safe rescue of those still being held hostage."
Disclosing what his government has done to boost security in Garissa, Kenyatta had this to say.
"My government has undertaken appropriate deployment to the affected area and is fully seized of the situation. I also take this opportunity to urge Kenyans to stay calm as we resolve this matter and to provide the authorities with any information they may have in connection with any threats to our security."
And in a surprise announcement, Kenyatta announced the training of 10,000 policemen to beef up security.
"I also further direct the Inspector General of Police to take urgent steps and ensure that the 10,000 recruits whose enrollment is pending promptly report for training at the Kenya Police College in Kiganjo. Kenya badly needs additional officers, and I will not keep the nation waiting."
Garissa in northeastern Kenya has, over the past 2 years, suffered Al-Shabaab attacks, but not on the gravity compared to Thursday attack.
James Shimanyula reporting. Galisa's attack is the worst since terrorists attacked Westgate shopping mall in the capital Nairobi, killing 67 people. But has Kenya learnt at all from Westgate how to respond to terror attacks? I put that question to Peter Alingo, office head and senior researcher with the Institute for Security Studies in Nairobi. And because of the poor audio quality, we have voiced Alingo's voice over.
I think Kenya hasn't learned anything at all in terms of how to respond to terror attacks. What we are seeing is a knee-jerk reaction that sends in security personnel in a manner that suggests they are not completely aware of what they are responding to. We need a closure in terms of lessons learned, but that has not been done. An effective response should also include the civilian component in terms of how civilians respond and react. Kenya has yet to learn, in my view, how to respond effectively to an attack of the magnitude that we have seen in the country since Westgate.
Reports say that there was a warning issued some weeks ago that Al-Shabaab is planning to attack major universities. Why didn't the Kenyan authority step up security in all its institutions? And why couldn't they actually hinder this attack?
This is the question we ask. In the last month or so, there has been quite a lot of information around in terms of the targets that are at high risk. These have included universities, with a number of them sending out warning notices to the university community and citizens at large about impending attacks. But you see, in Kenya, we never take things seriously. This is the reason why I think Kenya and the security agencies have been caught with their pants down once again. It's about planning and effectively deploying personnel. It's not just about numbers. It's also about effective utilization of available intelligence. This is not happening in the country, and these are the gaps that Al-Shabaab is taking advantage of.
Is it true, then, that Kenyan security agencies are not reacting to intelligence given to them by Western nations?
We have asked this question a number of times, including during the Westgate attack and also the attacks that happened in Mombasa, in Lamu. There were indications, and indeed this has been verified, that intelligence was available, but nobody acted on it. Where is the coordination in terms of intelligence gathering and response? That has been the missing link, and it is the link that is making Kenya extremely vulnerable.
How much international support is Kenya getting in the fight against Al-Shabaab?
I think there is a lot of support that Kenya gets. The question is, how effectively is Kenya utilizing this support? For example, the partnership with a number of foreign governments, including Canada and the US, they conduct a lot of training of Kenyan security personnel in counter-terrorism measures. We know the Americans and the British invest quite a lot of money in terms of helping Kenya to do this. We also must acknowledge that there are a number of problems in Kenya that hamper effective support, and this issue is linked to corruption.
Is this attack likely to have any impact on the policies of the Kenyan government?
What I think is that we will see some cosmetic changes.
I think we will see some cosmetic changes, but not how Kenya addresses the real structural issues that make the country vulnerable to extremism and attacks. We had the president address the nation and give assurances, but only speaking of increasing the numbers of security personnel. We need to have a proper policy dialogue that looks at the structural weaknesses within the security system in Kenya and within Kenyan society at large. This needs to include citizens so that there is an ongoing solution that is also owned by the Kenyan citizens.
I was speaking to Peter Alinho there. You're listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Refugees fleeing the insurgency in northeastern Nigeria have called on their president-elect Muhammadu Buhari to immediately stop the terrorist group Boko Haram so that they can return home. Cameroon is home to 200,000 Nigerian refugees, and more than 5 million Nigerians also live and work in the country. Our correspondent in Cameroon, Moki Kinzeka, gathered the views of Nigerian refugees and compiled this report.
The heroes of Nigeria, they reign green, white and green.
42-year-old Chidi Lucas diligently works at an electronic repairer shop in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, as he listens to this song about Nigeria.
Is it true that in Nigeria, the trains are moving again?
He fled the Boko Haram violence in the town of Goshe, northeastern Nigeria, mid last year. Nigeria had asked its displaced citizens to return if they intended to take part in the polls. Despite not taking part, Chidi, who supported defeated President Goodluck Jonathan, says he has accepted the verdict of fellow Nigerians.
He has done a lot in Nigeria, like good roads, many things, improvement. Nigeria came out as the first economic country in Africa. Since Goodluck Jonathan took power in Nigeria, there's no first scarcity in Nigeria. But it is democracy. Buhari has taken over. We support him.
Chidi says the main weakness of Jonathan was the failure to decisively deal with the Boko Haram insurgency. He says his wish is for Jonathan's successor, Muhammadu Buhari, to bring back home the 1.5 million displaced persons.
Boko Haram has been in Nigeria since. Cameroon government, Chadian government, and Niger government put hand in fighting Boko Haram. As Buhari is taking over now, he will continue where Goodluck Jonathan has left.
Another refugee, 32-year-old Aissatou Joel, says even if Buhari assures them Boko Haram has been eradicated, she will not go back home.
I will not go back because I was traumatized when my husband was harassed and killed. The massacre should be stopped so that people I left behind do not go through the pain I went through.
Shortly after his victory, Buhari promised to weed out Boko Haram. Emmanuel Odimere, who is hosting three relatives who fled Banki, told me she hopes Buhari will completely defeat Boko Haram.
It was God's will that Buhari should win. What I expect of him is a peaceful Nigeria and not trying to Islamize the whole country.
Cameroon-born political analyst and international relations specialist, Professor Ngole Ngole Elvis, says the immediate challenge for Buhari is to defeat Boko Haram.
Boko Haram is likely to continue his insurgency. But what matters here is that Buhari have to know that many Nigerians would want to be seen as a people, the number one country in Africa, the number one economy. They should fight the Boko Haram insurgency.
Nigerian president-elect Muhammadu Buhari will be inaugurated on May 29th, but it remains to be seen if Nigerians like Chidi Lucas will return home.
That was Moke Kindeka reporting.
Human rights.
Between 1959 and 1998, there was a mass exodus of refugees out of Rwanda due to the widespread atrocities which culminated into the 1994 genocide. About 4,000 of these refugees ended up in Zambia. However, in June 2013, the secession clause was invoked on Rwandan refugees, and the ones in Zambia, like in other countries, lost their refugee status. In a renewed bid to implement the clause, the Zambian government warned that it will not continue to host Rwandans who do not have legal documentation, allowing them to continue living in Zambia. From Kigali, Flora Kaitezi reports.
Zambia is getting increasingly impatient with Rwandans who have refused to return back to Rwanda and keep rejecting Rwanda's offer to receive passports. Colonel Kaunda Tushuke Panji, the Zambian Deputy Minister for Home Affairs, says the former refugees now risk deportation.
Well, our laws are very clear. You can't stay in the country if you've got no papers. So that's why your government has offered these people a passport. If they've got a passport, Rwanda passport, then they can apply to the Zambian government for other permits which allow them to stay there. But without any papers, they become illegal immigrants. And our law is extremely clear on that one. So the choice is theirs.
Even after a tripartite meeting between Zambia, Rwanda and the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, was held in Kigali, Rwanda's Minister of Disaster Management and Refugee Affairs, Seraphine Mukantabana, says calls for the former Rwandan refugees living in Zambia to return home seem to have fallen on deaf ears.
Zambia is hosting the biggest number of Rwandans. They're not living there as refugees because they lost their refugee status. Some have very rigid attitudes and they want to forcefully live in Zambia. They say they don't want Rwandan passports and they don't want to return home. If they decided to repatriate, we are more than ready to facilitate. But if they want to stay, they should apply for official documents.
Figures from Rwanda's Ministry of Disaster Management and Refugee Affairs indicate that only 25 of an estimated 4,000 Rwandan refugees have received passports. None of them has returned ever since the cessation clause was invoked. Laura Locastro, the UNHCR representative in Zambia, says the issue is beyond their mandate.
At this point in time, it goes beyond the UNHCR capacity and mandate to find a real solution. So we really count on the two governments to sit together and try to decide on the way forward. We need to find a solution. The people, otherwise, they remain as illegal migrants.
Theogene Havugimana, a human rights activist based in Rwanda's Bugesera district, believes that the deadlock between the two governments leaves the former refugees caught in the middle. He warned that this poses a risk to the rights of the refugees.
There is a need for the two sides to candidly engage the refugees and take their concerns into consideration. Frank dialogue is very important at this point in order to ensure that the situation does not result in a violation of human rights.
So far, only 733 out of the 4,000 former refugees have immigration permits, according to the Zambian government. The two governments have now agreed on a three-month period to heavily sensitize Rwandans living in Zambia to repatriate or acquire proper documentation allowing them to stay there legally.
Flora Kaitesi reporting. South Africa's most popular stand-up comedian, Trevor Noah, has been appointed to host America's most popular television talk show, The Daily Show, on Comedy Central. Noah takes over from Jon Stewart, who has announced his intention to retire after hosting the show for over a decade. As Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, the appointment has been received with excitement from many South Africans.
I was walking on Broadway the other day and there was a man walking down the street shouting at the top of his lungs, "Ask anybody the red American History 101. I hate President Obama. Ask me why." And I said, "Why?" And he was like, "What?" And he looked at me like I was crazy for talking to him.
At a young age, Noah realized that he was born to make people laugh. He became a comedian, writer, producer, DJ, actor, and even hosted radio and television shows. His star started rising in 2010 when he decided to drop everything and concentrate on comedy. His ability to spin any situation into laughter using five different languages soon gave him a large following locally and abroad.
I was so happy when I got here and I saw people that looked like they were from South Africa. I felt at home. I greeted them in the streets like, "Hey, San Bonani!" And they were like, "Hey, ¿qué pasó? ¿Qué malo quiero de paisanos? ¿Qué no quiero? ¿Se de favalo? ¿Qué lo hacer?" Whoa, no. I didn't know this, but apparently I'm Mexican.
Last month's announcement that the 31-year-old will be the next host of America's most popular show, The Daily Show, has got the world talking and left many South Africans extremely excited. 18-year-old Whitney Mayer has become Noah's fan as long as she remembers.
Dude is like authentic. He's original. That's what I like about him. And he isn't fake. And he's cute, but that's not the point. I love him too much.
But her brother, Steve, who is also a fan of Noah, thinks Stewart's shoes will be too big for the stand-up comedian.
He's a funny guy, but, you know, his jokes are becoming recurring, man. And I think it's getting old now. It must change.
But Noah's old tweets, considered by some as provocative to women, have been thrown at him by his critics. But Banele Hadebe thinks such people lack the sense of humor.
It's jealousy and it's not fair to bring up the past. It's just not cool. So I think he'll make it because he's already making it big in the USA.
Trevor Noah was born and raised in the impoverished township of Soweto. His presence on the international stage became vivid in 2012 when he appeared on The Tonight Show and later on The Late Show with David Letterman in the following year. In 2014, he went one foot into The Daily Show when he became a recurring contributor. And now that he has all the show to himself, many say it's time for the developed world to taste African talent.
When I went to Germany for the first time, I was in one of those takeaway places where you make your own sandwiches. And I walked in, and the woman was very nice to me. She's like, Guten Tag, kann ich Ihnen helfen? And I looked at her, and I said, Confidence, Trevor. Guten Tag. Ich will ein klein Brötchen haben, bitte schön. Das schwarze Brötchen mit der Käse und der Schinken, bitte schön. Und gib für mich auch die Salami und ein Pepsi-Cola trinken, bitte. And I'll never forget, she looked at me and she said, the schwarze Hitler.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting.
Your say.
That time again where we take the back seat and let you have your say on the stories we have been covering. Crispin Mwakideo is here with me.
Yes, indeed, Assumpta. And I guess by now you all know that the big story in Africa this week has been the Nigerian elections, which took place on Saturday, March the 28th.
Absolutely. At least I know. And Africa's most populous nation has elected Muhammadu Buhari as its next leader after he defeated incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan by more than 2 million votes. Can you imagine?
Exactly. And as you can imagine, Buhari's victory generated a heated debate between his supporters and those of President Goodluck Jonathan. I sorted out a few of the responses, and now, probably due to excitement, Paul Ime Green could only manage one word. And he said, Buhari!
Okay.
Samaila Ibrahim commented, Buhari is best suited to lead Nigeria because he was there before and his record speaks for itself. And then Yahuza Ibrahim Sabon Sara, another Buhari fan, had this to say. He, Buhari that is free from corruption among others. We'll see about that. And then Yinka Adeparusi says, a sincere and objective hardliner is what the country needs for now, and Buhari falls into that frame. Kabito Kato from Uganda says, a true democrat, Nigeria requires him at this time. May he use his foresight and wealth of experience in handling his task of leadership.
Okay, we have heard from the Buhari corner. What do supporters of Jonathan think of their new president-elect?
Well, not really much. There was one comment from Francine Yvette Mandeville. I don't know whether he or she is Nigerian or not, but the comment was, if Buhari fails to eradicate Boko Haram, he too will face the same fate like Jonathan. And there were also neutral voices, such as Prince Bunyore, who said, all politicians are the same. And that means Buhari and Jonathan are the same. Huh? Mm-hmm. Bunyore used a rather, should I say, weird analogy to compare politicians, which we shall not air due to our editorial policy.
Wow, exactly. Just to remind you that we do edit your comments so that they conform to DW's editorial standards. Anything else?
Yes, Assumpta, before we just wind up, there was a comment from Rolf Auer, and he called himself a disinterested observer. And he sent us an email saying that if the new government of Nigeria vigorously and publicly investigated the suspicious death of Nigerian poet and human rights activist Ken Saro-Wiwa, they would further assure their fellow Nigerians of their honest intentions. That's it from me, Assumpta.
Thanks indeed. And just in case you would like to comment on the stories that we cover here, you can do so either by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Also, you can send us a text message to +491609575910. And now a summary of what we have been covering. At least 100 people have been killed and over 60 injured after Al-Shabaab fighters forced their way into a university in the town of Garissa in central Kenya and opened fire at the students. Refugees fleeing the insurgency in northeastern Nigeria call on President-elect Muhammadu Buhari to immediately stop the terrorist group Boko Haram so that they can return home. And Zambian government has warned that it will not continue to host Rwandans who do not have legal documentation, allowing them to live in Zambia. And that's it from me, Assumpta Latus, and the team for this week. Africa Link will be back at the same time on Monday. Till then, have a wonderful weekend, and for those who celebrate, Happy Easter!